Let's go ahead and get started. Welcome, everyone. Thank you for coming. My name is Pablo Barbo, and I'm a SharePoint developer in the ECM team. And we're going to be talking about apps. So before we start, I wanted to make a quick survey. How many of you guys are developers? Great. You guys are in the right place, because we're actually going to spend most of our time in Visual Studio talking about the code. If you're not a developer and you don't feel comfortable with that, this may not be the best talk for you. But if you guys are developers, like this is a great place to be at. How many of you guys are developing or have developed full trust solutions on top of SharePoint? Okay, pretty much everybody. Great. How many of you guys have worked already in the new app model in the preview release of SharePoint? Okay, just a few. How many of you, this is the first talk that you've come to hear about the app model and you know absolutely nothing about it? Okay. Great. We have a few hands up. For this talk, I'm not going to cover a lot of the basics of the app model. I'm actually going to drill down into one specific scenario. I'm going to try to make my best to clarify the things that I'm assuming when I do the talk for you guys. But I'm not going to be covering the very basics of the app model. I'm going to be actually drilling into a specific scenario. So the objective of the talk is we're going to be diving into the app model from an ECM perspective. We're going to focus in document management scenarios, and we're going to look at some of the things that you could only do before in full trust, but now you can do by using the new app model. And we're going to look at how those enable you to do new things on the cloud and on-prem that before you could only do on-prem using full trust solutions. So the things that you're going to be learning here is we're going to do a deep dive into remote event receivers. It's really cool functionality included in the app model, very powerful, especially when you think about the cloud. We're going to be also looking at client web parts and how you can expose content from external sources into SharePoint, both in the cloud and on-prem. And we're going to do that in the context in the context of a custom apps for the app catalog. So a few months ago when we started to think about doing a talk about apps and ECM, I was thinking about what would be the best thing that I can show off that will show you something new about the app model. And the first thing that comes to mind when we think about the app model is I'm going to build an app to sell in the marketplace. And a lot of the talks that we're doing right now on apps, they're all about building an app that is absolutely reusable in 1,000 sites, and you can install it whenever you are, and it's atomic, and it's unique, and all the content that contains is kind of scoped to that app. And that's great. That allows you to build a lot of, allows you to have an opportunity to sell apps that you didn't have before. But none of the talks are covering kind of the, I have a very specific scenario and a very specific need, maybe involving content that already exists on my site, and I want the app model to actually connect to that and kind of enhance the existing solution that I have. So for this talk, I'm actually going to be covering that part and showing you a little bit about the opportunities that you have with the app model when you're working not in the constraints of an atomic unit that you need to be able to install anywhere, but maybe when you have a very specific problem on a very specific site where you already have some content and you want the app model to deploy things and connect to the things that already exist in the web where you're installing it. So we're basically going to be looking at an existing document management scenario, and we're going to be building a provided hoster app. If you've looked at the app model, you know that there's three models. You can actually create what's called an auto-hosted app, which automatically deploys your server-side coding to Azure every time you install it. There's the SharePoint hosted app, which is basically all of your stuff goes into SharePoint, but you can only do like client-side JavaScript. You cannot have server-side code. And then there's the provider-hosted app, which basically says, I'm going to take care of putting the server-side code of my app wherever I need it. And that is the most flexible solution when you think about custom apps because it allows you to host the code for your app wherever you want. It can be a public solution in Azure, but it can also be an IIS server inside the firewall, or it can be an Apache server, it could be a Linux server. You can do whatever you want when you think about a provider host or apps. And we're going to build it for the app catalog for the reasons that I was mentioning. We're actually going to be extending a specific solution that already exists on a web. And to showcase what's the value of the app model, for the purpose of this talk, we're going to be doing all the demos on the cloud. I have absolutely no backup on-prem because I didn't want to have a lot of stuff that you could think that I'm faking. So all my talk is using cloud services. So we're going to be working with SharePoint Online. We're going to be working with the TFS service online, the new cloud service that hosts TFS for you on the cloud. And we're going to be using Azure to host the provided hosted app. It's important to note, however, that all the things that I'm going to be doing today, even though I'm focusing on the cloud kind of to showcase all the power that you have, you can absolutely do on-prem as well. So you could deploy something completely inside the firewall where you have like your SharePoint inside, you can have your TFS or your external system inside, and you can have like your app hosted completely inside the firewall. I think that's one of the great values that the app model has. So a really quick recap on the app model. If you've looked at the app model before, you've heard about this concept of an app web, and basically it means like whatever SharePoint element that you put in your app will be deployed inside a new web that gets created when the app is installed. And that's where like content types and lists and all the SharePoint elements that you create are deployed. For this talk, we're not going to be using an app web. We're actually going to completely ignore the concept of the app web, and we're going to hook directly into the host web. What that means is we're going to need to take advantage of one specific feature of the app model, which is an app can request permissions when it gets installed. And one of the permissions an app can request is, I want permissions to be able to modify and work with a host web. And you have a lot of different things. You can actually request permissions for reading, you can request permissions for writing, or you can actually request the permissions that we're going to use for the purpose of this talk, which is full control, which will allow us to actually go and grab lists and put remote event receivers on them and modify web part pages, etc. So the specific scenario we're going to be looking at, let's imagine for a minute the Contoso Electronics development team, which is the team in charge of developing the Contoso Electronic website, and they have like a group of developers and people who work on developing the new features on top of the site. And they already have like two things that they are using for working. They have a SharePoint Online document management solution where they have a website that contains a list, and they're using document sets to track different documents and related content that they need for when they're developing their feature. And they're using TFS Online to track like the dev work and the code itself and who's doing what and what's the current state of things. So I want to show you really quick what that looked like before we start. So here's my current Contoso Electronics website, and I have my spec library. The spec library has a specific set of doc sets, and this is all out of the box, created without all the out of the box features of 2013. When I drill into one of these guys, I can see like the spec, the dev plan, the breakdown, the test plan, etc. I can see who's the feature owner, which is me, who's which feature area there is, etc. And when the new feature gets created, the process that gets followed with out of the box would be, I go and create a new spec set, which is going to be, let's say, our PayPal integration. I'm going to pick my feature owner, and this is actually a user field. The feature area, this is a taxonomy field. I'm actually going to pick ECM for it. I'm hooking to a specific term set in the taxonomy, and a TFS work item ID, which tracks the details about the work item on the TFS side. And for that, I would actually have to go to TFS here create a new backlog item And after I've created it, grab the ID out of it and go back to SharePoint and put it. It's pretty much a very manual process at this point. And the other thing to note is, because if we imagine that the guy who is actually creating this doc set is the feature owner, then you can actually start to create some, you could think about creating some logic on top of the feature, on top of the site that will automatically populate the feature owner, the feature area, and even populate the TFS work item ID as the item gets added. And that's the kind of thing that you would usually do an event receiver for on item added. So let's go back here and let's talk really quickly about what we're going to be doing. So we're going to write an app that connects to that list, that specific list instance that we just saw. And we're going to do two things in that app. The first one is we're going to create a remote event receiver that gets plugged into that app that listens to the item added. And when that happens, it's actually going to go and populate the feature owner with the user who created that document set. Then it's going to go and grab the user profile data for that user. And this is new to 2013. You can actually, from the client-side object model, grab that content. And we're going to grab the department of that user, and then we're going to go and interact with the taxonomy service to either grab or create a term set for that a term for that specific item and populate that. But not only that, we're also going to call TFS from the app, create the work the backlog item, get the ID back, populate it into SharePoint, and that's going to be part one. And part two of that is we're going to create a client web part that actually we're going to that we're going to put in the documents at home page that will grab the details about what's happening with that specific item, and it's going to display that directly into SharePoint. These two are scenarios that you could actually think on building with full trust solutions. With sandbox solutions, you couldn't do like this level of integrations. So it's great to see like the app model is a new way that allows you to create those kinds of things. For the purpose of the talk, we're going to be hosting this in Azure, but I do wanted to make the point again. I'm doing it in Azure, but it doesn't have to be in Azure. You can actually host this wherever you want, whatever server that you want, as long as you're doing a provided hosted app. And all of this directly in the host web, so we're not going to be creating an app web, and we're not going to be doing that. We're not going to be using a new list for that. So let's start with part one, the feature owner, feature area, and TFS work item ID. So let's talk about remote event receivers. Remote event receivers are web service-based event receivers. And the simple way to think about them is every time the event receiver would get triggered, what's going to happen, instead of some code on that server run, SharePoint is going to invoke a remote endpoint that it knows about, telling you the information about what happened with that event. And it allows you to hook in a lot of, and it allows you to hook to any of the regular event receivers endpoints that SharePoint already has, even though Visual Studio tools don't show you that when you actually go and create a remote event receiver. The one thing to note about remote event receivers is they're available in auto-hosted and provided hosted app only. That is, again, because SharePoint-hosted apps don't have server-side code. They're only client-side. So you actually need some server-side code that is handling that remote event receiver code. And the other key thing is it receives an OAuth context token, which is an authentication token that allows the app to call back to SharePoint on behalf of the user who actually performed that operation, and on behalf of the app, and actually perform actions in SharePoint. So I thought before I dive into the code, I show you a little bit about what's the flow on how the app server or the remote event receiver gets that token that allows it to talk back to SharePoint. So the first thing that happens in remote event receivers is something happens in SharePoint, an item got added, updated, deleted, the security context information changed, the web got created, whatever event you actually plug to. So the first thing that SharePoint will do is it will call to the ACS, and it's going to get a context token for that specific app and for that specific user. And that context token almost it's a promise, if you will, that it's a promise to be used to call SharePoint back. It's not actually the thing that the app will use, and it's going to call SharePoint. SharePoint is going to call the app server, and it's going to pass that context token into the app server. Now the app server can't call SharePoint back yet. It actually needs to call ACS again with that context token and with the information about the identity of that app, and obtain what's called an access token, which is the thing that will allow the app server to start to talk back to SharePoint and modify the items on it. And notice that I'm being very specific about this happening for a user and an app. So actually, when the app is talking back to SharePoint, SharePoint knows exactly which app and for which user the app is working on behalf of. And this is going to be important later on. So what we're going to be doing is we're going to go and write the remote event receiver, which is going to basically modify, populate the feature owner, get the profile properties, create the term and populate the feature area, create the TFS item and populate the item. And then we're going to plug that event receiver in the list that lives in the host web. And for that, we cannot use the element XML. If you've played with remote event receivers in the current version of the tools, you've probably seen if you do right-click add and you add a remote event receiver, it'll add a web service and an element XML. But the reason we cannot use that is because the element XML is scoped to the app web, which basically means that event receiver will only be part of the app web, not part of the host web. But it is possible to use the client-side object model to register that event receiver in the host web, which is what we're going to be doing. And for that, we're going to be looking at two events that are new part of the app model. One is the app installed, and the other one is the app uninstalled. And if you've worked with full trust solutions and you've worked with feature activating and feature deactivating, this will sound very familiar because they're pretty much the same thing in the context of apps. So when an app gets installed, if there's an app installed event, that will get kicked by SharePoint into the remote server, and you will allow the server to do things and do prep work, and the same when the app is uninstalled. So let's get to it. Let me switch back here. The first thing I want to mention, you've probably already looked at this. There's a dev side for you to work on top when you're creating solutions on top of SharePoint. And usually you can just create your dev side and start doing your work and use Visual Studio on top of it. But because our scenario is depending on a list and some specific content types and fields already listed in the host web, I actually had to go and do the prep work on this side of creating like the minimal subset parts that the app needs. So I had to actually go and create the spec library list and create the fields and create like all the specific elements that the host web needs to have. Again, because this app is not kind of self-contained, it's actually plugging to things that already exist on the host web. So I have a Visual Studio project that I already created for time purposes, and the first thing I wanted to walk with you over is the app manifest. And the app manifest is the XML that defines the property, and you probably saw it during the keynote. And they briefly showed, in the keynote, Scott briefly showed the permission tab and how the app requests permission. So the thing that we're going to do to be able to work with the host web is we're going to ask specific permissions for the web scope, and we're going to ask for full control that will allow. The app is going to ask for permissions to do whatever it wants in the host web. The next thing we're going to do is we're going to ask for write permissions on the taxonomy service, which will allow us to either read and write and create terms on top of that. And we're going to ask for read permissions on top of the user profile, so we can read the user profile properties out of that. The one thing that you didn't see during the keynote is what's happening in the background. In the background, Visual Studio is actually creating an XML for us, and that XML has the specific properties and metadata about the app. And when we're modifying the permissions, the key thing that's happening is Visual Studio is just populating the app permissions request XML part, which is the thing that's defining how the app, what permissions the app needs. The next thing that I'm going to do is, if you go to the if I go to the SharePoint project and Visual Studio, there's a few properties of interest here: handle app installed and handle app uninstalled. And I'm going to switch these guys to true and true. And you just saw what Visual Studio just did is actually modify that app XML and added the entries that says this app is interested in handling the installed event and uninstalled event, and this is the endpoint that you should be calling when the app is installed. So this is referring to remote app URL app event receiver, and I actually created this beforehand in here. And an event receiver in the .NET world is pretty much a WCF service that implements a specific interface that SharePoint knows how to call. And the key interface here is iRemote event service. And the iRemote event service is an interface that contains two methods. One is process event, and the other one is process one-way event. And the way to think about those two guys is process event is the event receiver, remote event receiver that will be invoked for synchronous operations. And process one-way event is the event that will be invoked for async operations. And if you've worked with WCF, you probably recognize the one-way name on that. That basically means that when SharePoint invokes the async receiver, SharePoint is not waiting for that receiver to finish until is not waiting for that event receiver to finish. It's just calling it, letting it know that it happened, letting it run, and then moving on. And I have some code for the app installation already that is basically creating using a talking helper, which is a class on that's added in Visual Studio for us that will take care of all the authentication process that we just talked about, the flow of OAuth. So we're using the token helper to create a client context to talk back to SharePoint. And this method, the create app event client context, what it's doing is it's actually grabbing the context token out of the properties. It's calling ACS on our behalf and obtaining the access token. And it's creating the client context with that so that we can actually talk back to SharePoint. And I'm handling the two events that we cared about, app installed and app uninstalled. And we're going to write the code to actually go and install our event receiver first. So I'm going to do a lot of cheating on this talk, writing code really fast. The good news is you don't get to see how crappy I write on stage, but I'll make sure of walking through all the code as I do that. So I'm going to be loading, when the app is installed, I'm going to be loading the host web of the site, and I'm going to be asking for a specific list by title, and this is our spec library list. And you'll see that I'm being very specific about if I don't get that list, I'm going to fail this event receiver. And a key thing about app installed and app uninstalled event receivers is if they fail, the app installation or app uninstallation will fail. So the user installing the app will actually see your app installation failed and the app won't show up in the site. The same thing on uninstalling, which is kind of weird, but it will happen. If your uninstall failed, your app won't be able to be uninstalled. It'll just continue to live there saying telling you that the uninstallation failed. So once we have the list, the only thing we need to do is work with the remote, with the event receiver's properties of the list, and we're going to add a new event receiver in there. And if you've worked with regular event receivers in 2010, this is probably sounding very familiar, and you would be looking at something like receiver assembly and receiver class, and that's how you used to work with the regular event receivers. Now, in the world of remote event receivers, you don't need to specify receiver assembly or receiving class. Instead of that, you get to specify a receiver URL, which is the endpoint that SharePoint needs to invoke when this event happens. The other thing that you'll probably notice is this is part of the event receiver definition creation info. And what that means is any place where you can install regular event receivers, you'll be able to install remote event receivers. And this is actually really powerful, way more powerful than the MSDN documentation make it sound, because you can actually grab content types and put event, remote event receivers on top of them. You can grab lists, put it on them. You can do it on webs. So you get to cook in a lot of different parts of SharePoint and have your custom code run when those things are happening. All right, so that's my app installation code. And the app uninstallation is going to be actually really simple as well. I'm going to go and grab the list again, and then I'm going to query for the remote event receiver by name, and I'm going to uninstall it. And it's important for me to point out that because we're doing the work manually in the app install and app uninstall, we need to clean up for ourselves. If we don't add the code to remove the remote event receiver on the app uninstalled case, basically the event receiver will continue to leave after your app is uninstalled. So when you think about not using the elements XML, when you're using the elements XML, a lot of things are taken care for you. When the app is uninstalled, it gets deployed. When the app is uninstalled, it gets removed. That will not happen here because we're basically going through the CSUM code. All right, so we have our code created. And I'll point out that I'm referencing DocSet event receiver here. And I've pre-created that event receiver. That remote event receiver here is again another WCF service implementing exactly the same interface. And for this one, we're going to be working with the item added event, which is an async event. The properties that the event receive will tell you a lot about the thing that happened in SharePoint. And there's a specific properties for the different events. There's web event properties, there's item event properties, there's security event properties. For our case, we're going to be working with the item event properties. And we're going to again go and create a client context from the properties, and we're going to process the item itself. So let's go and load a few things on the item added event. We're going to load the list, very simple, the list item, great. And let's look at the people manager. So one of the things we said is we're going to grab the user profile data out of the user who created that that list item, and we're going to be using that data to go and work with the term set. So the people manager is new CSUM on SharePoint 2013. It exposes all the operations that you will care about the user profile. And we're currently using the getPropertiesFor method, which will return the user profile properties for the user who actually performed the operations. But if you go into the methods that are exposed there, you'll see that there's a lot of other things exposed. There's a lot of the social things exposed. You can actually find out who's following who, or which tags I'm following, or you can start following tags, you can stop following, you can start following people. So you get to interact with the user profile very closely. And this is actually really cool. This is one of the biggest things that got requested in the CSUM in 2010, so I'm super excited that it is now part of the client-side object model in 2013. All right. Great. That's all you got. All right. Good stuff. So let me go back here. Then the other thing that I'm doing, is I'm actually reading a field from the web, and this is the host web again. And I'm finding the feature area, which is the taxonomy field that we want to interact with. And if you've worked with taxonomy fields in the server-side world, you know that usually setting the taxonomy field involved getting the field itself and actually invoking a few operations on top of it. It's kind of different model than when you interact with some other fields, mainly because of what the taxonomy field is doing inside. And that maps pretty well to the CSUM code that is now exposed. So I'm gonna come here and I wanna write some extra code, which is actually gonna be doing the work of invoking the changing the properties. And I'm gonna create a new method here, which is gonna receive department. And I'm going to write some more code really fast. Yes, you can tell I type really quickly. Yes, thank you. All right, so let's really quickly look at what this code is doing. So I'm basically grabbing one of the user profile properties, and I'm specifically asking what's the current department of the user that modified this item. And I'm passing that, and I'm going to obtain a term out of it. And the code to obtain a term is using the new CSUM as well on 2013 to interact with the taxonomy service. And I'm actually creating I'm creating a taxonomy session. I'm grabbing the default keywords term store. I'm going and locating the specific department term set inside it, and I'm making a query to grab the terms that match the specified label, and I'm going and executing that on the server. And the last thing I'm doing here is, if that term doesn't exist, I'm actually going and creating a new one. So yet again, more surface exposed in CSUM. Now it's absolutely possible for client-side object model to interact with the taxonomy service. In fact, a lot of the code that you'll see in the social world is using this from JavaScript to make queries to the taxonomy service and interact with the terms on it. Really, really cool stuff. It opens a lot of opportunities, out of it. Going back to our event receiver code, I'm receiving the term here, and I'm invoking the set field value by term, which is basically setting the specific field value in the list item to the term that we just got out of the term store. That is the code that's taking care of setting the field, the feature area. Then we have a very simple line that is setting the feature owner field to the current user. And last, we have some code here that is is grabbing the title of that item, and it's calling TFS on our behalf, and it's creating a work item, a backlog item with that title, and it's grabbing the ID and putting it in the in the list item, and it's updating the list item right there. All right, I think that's all the code we needed. I'm gonna go ahead and run this. And this is actually going to go and run against our dev site on the cloud. It's going to ask me to connect. I'm going to say, keep me signed in. And what's happening right now is two things are happening. One, SharePoint is the Visual Studio is creating an app package that is transmitting into SharePoint. And it's also creating a local debug instance to debug our code. That is holding like all the server-side code that we need. Now, the thing that I'm not telling you is I'm actually expecting this to fail. Can somebody guess why? It's not an easy guess. But if you think about it, remote event receivers mean the server-side, the SharePoint server needs to be able to invoke some endpoint, which needs to be exposed somehow for the call to be reached. In this case, we're actually debugging locally using the local IIS, which is only available, if you've used that, you know that it's only available for local usage, which means, and I'm deploying this code into the cloud, which means SharePoint Online is gonna try to call my machine, which is not available externally. And since it's not able to call the app installed event, it's gonna fail the installation of the app. Now, the reason I wanted that to happen, and this is taking a long time to deploy, is to point out that when you're working directly against the cloud, there are certain limitations that you need to think about, like this, when you're developing against the cloud. The solution for this, if you really need to debug, F5 debug remote event receivers, is to use a local SharePoint installation, pretty much the same thing you would have done it in 2010. You'll have a local SharePoint. You can still develop on top of that, and you'll be able to F5 debug the remote event receivers. And this is taking a very long time to deploy. Oh, there we go. App install failed. And this will be very clear. There was no endpoint listening in the app event receiver service. So what that means is SharePoint was unable to call our install event receiver, and because install and uninstall event receivers will fail the app installation, then it was unable to install the app for us. So the way I'm going to work around this for the purpose of continuing to work against the cloud is I'm gonna turn these guys off, and I'm gonna tell SharePoint I'm not gonna be handling the app install and app uninstall. Instead, while this deployed, I'm gonna show you I created a little page that has little buttons for me to be able to test this code and debug it. It's not the best solution, but it's actually very effective to debug your code, the code that you have in remote event receivers, and you'll be able to catch pretty much 99% of the issues that you will find when you're deployed against the cloud. But it also points out something very interesting, which is when you're working with remote event receivers and with apps, it's really important for you to have a lot of logging, because things will fail. Either the method will not be able to call. If you're dependent of an external system, the call to the external system may fail, et cetera. And when you're working in the cloud, you don't have a lot of endpoints for you to actually go and debug. So it is a good practice to actually have a lot of logging to kind of be able to look at those things. So I turned those off. I'm going to come here and run this up. I have my page that's allowing me to test the install and uninstall. And I'm going to go back to Visual Studio. I'm going to come here to my DocSet event receiver and set a breakpoint on it. And I'm going to go back to my page. I actually know that I believe we already have an item in there. If not, let's go ahead and create it really quickly. New item. Test item. I'm going to leave the values empty because I want the code that we just wrote to fill them out. And I'm going to look right here at the ID of that item so I can test my event receiver against the cloud. Again, it's not the most beautiful solution, but it's actually very effective. So I know the item is 7. I'm going to process this item against 7. And here I am. I can actually step forward. I can look at the code running. I'm going to execute all the way to the execute query. I already have the user profile property, so you could come here and start to look. Yep, there's my account name. There's my information from my user profile, my department, my phone number, my job title, etc. And I can just let this run. Wait for it to finish. And then come back to SharePoint and look at the changes that the code did on our behalf. If I go to the view all properties, I'll see, yeah, great. The feature owner got populated, feature area got populated with the taxonomy data, and the TFS work item ID got populated. And if I come here back to TFS, to the backlog, I can actually see my test item showed up in there. All right, cool. So that's part one. And we're not going to deploy the app and see the real remote event receivers running until the very end of the talk. So let me do a quick recap on remote event receivers. They're web service based, and two methods you need to think about. Process event and process one-way event. One for sync, one for async. There's new app events, app uninstalled and app uninstalled. There's also a third one that I didn't mention, app upgraded, for when app needs to handle upgrade code. And they're sync only, and the app will fail, installation or uninstallation will fail if those failed. They can be deployed into the host web or into any site that the app has permissions to by using CSOM. And you can do that simply by finding the right element where you can register event receivers and add an event receiver by using a receiver URL. And there's no F5 debugging. We're working against the cloud, basically because SharePoint Online won't be able to call your local machine where you want to debug those guys. So if you really need F5 debugging, you should set up your server locally and do debugging locally, and then you can actually deploy your packages against the cloud. So let's go over to part two of the app, which is Let's add the information about what's happening in TFS into the documents at home page. So for that, we're going to look at client web parts. And client web parts, the very basics of client web parts is basically an iframe to a page that lives in the remote app server. The page can also be hosted in an app web, but if you're doing that, you cannot have server-side code. And again, app web, it means that it lives inside SharePoint, not in your remote server. And it also includes, as remote event receivers, a context token to call back to SharePoint and perform operations on top of that, on behalf of that user. And the call to that page will also include a set of standard tokens that will let the app know from where it's actually receiving the call. So it's going to know which host URL, which is the host web URL, what language the current user is using, and if there is an app web, in our case there's not, if there is an app web, you'll also receive the information about what's the app web URL. And you can use those URLs with the context token to actually call back to SharePoint and read or perform whatever operation you need when the client web part is rendered. And one thing that's important about client web parts is they're exposed in the host web. And this goes a little bit against the thing that I said before, which is like all the SharePoint elements get deployed into the app web, not into the host web. But the reality is client web parts are a window into your app, if you will. So they're actually designed to live in the host web and to be able to allow users of the host web to embed those web parts wherever they need and to expose information from the app directly into the host web. That's pretty much how we're going to be using them. Now, one thing about our specific scenario is we need the item ID of the document set to be able to call TFS. Remember, the thing that we're going to be doing is we're going to be saying every time I go to the document set homepage, I'm going to grab the TFS work item ID that I saved before, and I'm going to go and query TFS to know like what's happening, like who has how many hours assigned, and who has those things assigned to, and how many work items we have left, et cetera. So every time that page renders, I need to know what item it's being looked at. And if you've worked with document sets, you know that the document set homepage is pretty much a forms page, which means it's one page for all the items. Why is that important? Because there's the concept of web part properties in client web parts, and they're defined per web part per page, and they're part of the web part tool pane. So you can actually edit that client web part and set the different properties on it. But they're set for that specific page. They're not going to change with the different items that are being rendered in the host web. And if you remember the slide back, I didn't mention that you get information about which item is being rendered in forms, in form webs. You actually get information about which website, but you don't know which item you're working with. So when you think about that this is an app that we're going to deploy in a custom, we're not going to sell this app, and we're not going to allow everybody to insert this web part. We're going to put it in a very specific place, in a very specific page. There's a solution for this, which is to use JavaScript post messages. And JavaScript post messages will basically allow me to allow the client web part to ask the parent page for information that it knows. And the parent page actually knows which list and which item is rendered, but the client web part doesn't. So it's going to ask the parent page, we're going to need to ask the parent page for the information about which list and which item is being rendered, and receive that back on the iframe, and then actually go and perform the operation on the back end in query TFS. So the iframe will go and do a post message, and the page will return that post message with this is the list ID and this is the docset ID. So this is the flow that we're going to be looking at when we build this client web part. And this looks very complicated, but it's not. Let's walk through it. The page is going to render with the iframe on it, and that iframe is going to be the iframe of a page in my app server. And when that renders, the first thing that the iframe is going to do is going to ask the parent page, hey, give me the data and the information about which list item you're working with. The page is going to respond and say the list is list ID X and the list item is list item ID Y. Then that is going to be used from the client web part to call a web API service that will receive that along with the context token. And it's going to use that to talk back to SharePoint, grab the TFS work item ID, and then go to TFS, grab the data about exactly what's happening with the work item, and then send that back to the client, and the client's going to use a client-side template to render that. And if you look at this diagram, this is probably the kind of diagram that you've looked at when you think about client-side solutions. You've never been able to do something as complex as this when you think about like a sandbox web part, mainly because it was kind of self-contained and you couldn't call anything different. In the app model, because this lives in your own server, you get to pretty much do whatever you want. And then the last thing we're going to do is when the app is installed. The other thing we're going to do is when the app is installed, we're going to grab the documents at homepage, and we're going to pretty much insert that those web parts as the app is installed, and then we're going to remove them as the app is uninstalled. So let me just quickly go back here to the project we're working on. I'm going to stop this, and this one I'm going to go and create it from scratch. I'm going to go say add a new client web part, and I'm going to give this the work item details name. And this is going to do two things. It's going to create an element XML in the SharePoint project, and that element XML is actually quite simple. It basically specifies the basic information about the web part, and the key thing that it also specifies is which page in the remote server SharePoint needs to render inside the iframe when the web part is rendering. And I was talking about properties before, and this is the area in the XML where you would add properties that you want to define per page and have users specify them. And you would also specify how you want those to be passed to your URL. For this app, we're not going to be doing that. The only thing we're going to be doing is setting the sizes to something more reasonable on the that matches more of the content we're going to be rendering. So the other thing that Visual Studio did for us is it added a work item details page in the IIS or the Azure project. And the thing that we're going to do here is we're basically going to do a few things. We're going to first, on every page load, we're going to go and grab the context token from the request, and we're going to send that to the client. Why is this important? Because we want to send that context token later to a web API service to be able to call SharePoint. And it is important to point out that is okay. It is okay to get that context token and kind of expose it in the site, because a context token is not the thing that gets used to call SharePoint. It's a promise for a specific app to be able to call SharePoint, but the app still needs to call ACS and authenticate itself to get like the permission to call SharePoint. So that context token will not be usable to call SharePoint, even if somebody is able to grab it, without having like the app identity that needs to be able to call ACS and get an access token. So that's we're going to send that to the client, and then on the client we're going to do a few things. The first thing we're going to do is we're going to add some scripts that we're going to be using. We're going to be using jQuery for simplicity. We're going to be using underscore for the template engine, and we're going to add this script docset post message, which is the script that has the code to handle the post message request that we're going to be using against the parent web, and I'm going to show you a little bit more about that later. And then we're going to come back here to the body of it, and we're going to write some HTML tags. And this is actually just very simple, a client-side template that is basically rendering the remaining tasks of the total number of tasks and looping through the who has what assigned and rendering that. And this is a client-side template because we're going to be calling web API and receiving a JSON object back, and then we're going to use this client-side template to render the details about it. And the last thing we're going to be doing is we're going to write some code to ask the parent page the details, and then call back to the web API code. There's one little thing I need to do, which is move this out because I'm going to be using that host web URL later on my code. And let's look at the code that I just added here. I'm basically saying when the page is done, go and ask the parent page for the docset details. And let's really quickly look into what that is doing. The only thing that this is doing is a JavaScript code into the window parent saying, give me the items details of that page. And the handler for the parent page is actually right here. And we're validating who's asking for the details. This is probably good practice. And then this is the handler on the parent page. And the parent page is basically going to return an object that contains the list ID, which is it's grabbing it from the page context info. And it's also grabbing the query string ID, which is the document set ID that it's working on. And then it's posting that back into the page, which will eventually get into our function that we're passing right here, which basically means here's the item details that we just requested. We're going to append the host web and context token that we sent back from the server side, and then we're going to make an AJAX request into the web API TFS query controller with the item details that we just built. And then once we receive the value back, we're just using the client-side template that we just created back then to render the content out. So the last thing that I need to do is go back to the TFS query controller that I've had created previously but right now is empty, and write the code that will grab the list item details and grab the context token, talk to SharePoint, grab the TFS item ID, and then call TFS back. So once again, really quickly, my typing, very, very, very efficient. We just have a very simple post method that receives the data about that we had on the client, the list ID, docset ID, context token, and host web. And it uses that to get, again, a client context. And you'll see that now we're getting a client context specifically specifying which web we want to talk to, what's the context token that we need to use to authenticate ACS, and the domain that the app is running at. And then very simple code, grab the list item, load them, grab the TFS work item value out of it, and then if we do have a value, call TFS and grab the details about that and return that as a JSON object. And that's all she wrote. That's pretty much what we needed. Let me make sure that we have everything saved. Now, the last piece of code that I'm missing is the code that makes sure that when we install the app, this client web part gets deployed into the documents at homepage. Because what we want, this is a web part that got created not for any user to insert it, but for one very specific purpose, which is to live in the documents at homepage. So I'm going to come back to my code, my app installed code, and after I register the remote event receiver, I'm going to add some code to grab a file from the host web, and this is going to be the docset homepage, and then grab the web part manager out of it, and then basically go and add the web parts when the app gets installed. And I'm adding two web parts. One is the client web part, the web part that we just built. The other one is actually a script web part, a script editor web part. And the reason we need that is because we need also on the page, we need the code that handles the post message that we just wrote that asks for the item ID and the details about the item that the page is rendering. So our app is going to be adding those web parts when installed, and when we uninstall it, after we've removed the remote event receivers, let's go ahead, web part remove, and remove them. Great. That's all we needed to do. Let's run this very quickly. This is going to actually go to because we added a web part, a client web part, this is going to first uninstall the previous solution that we run, and it's going to install it, and it's going to install it again. Ooh, deployment errors. Okay, let's try that again. Great. It's again uninstalling the previous version of the app, and it's going and deploying the package again, and it's setting up the local IIS. And debugging against the cloud of client web parts is possible, mainly because it's your browser who's rendering the iframe. So it's your browser who's calling the local IIS server with a local host URL when you debug this guys. So the limitation that we talked about, how debugging remote event receivers against the cloud is not possible, doesn't apply to client web parts. You can debug client web parts because it's your browser, the one who's rendering the iframe, and it's making the call to your local box to try that out, to test that out. So I'm going to wait for this to install. Right. These installations have been taking a very long time. And what we're going to do is we're going to go and test our app installed and app uninstalled, and we're going to actually go and see the details coming out from TFS from the client web part. I'm going to wait for this to run. How are we doing on time? Yeah, network hasn't been the best thing. Okay, great, successfully installed, perfect. The browser will launch. I do trust my app. I'm gonna have to use my debuggers for the cloud for my remote event receivers, and that is gonna go and deploy my app part. I'm gonna go back to one of my items, test item. I'm gonna refresh it. It actually installed twice. Great. You get to see twice how the thing works. Awesome. So what you just saw right there is both those iframes rendered the same page. Both actually queried the parent page for the item ID, grabbed the details back, called the web API server. The web API server first called SharePoint, grabbed the item ID, then called TFS and grabbed the details about the specific items, and then render it. The one thing I do want to do to kind of show this up is I'm going to go here to TFS. I'm going to assign this to a specific test item. I'm going to go ahead and move it to a specific sprint. Save and close. I'm going to go to that sprint, and I'm going to go and add an item into it, a specific work item. And I'm going to say to code backend, and this is going to have like 12 hours remaining work. And you probably noticed, as I mentioned before, this is actually running against the Visual Studio Service Cloud. Great. I just added that, and let me go back to SharePoint, refresh my two iframe page. And we can see how now I have one item remaining of 12 hours. All right, so we only have a few minutes left. Let's go back and do a recap on what we just saw. So client web parts are exposed in the host web, and they're pretty much an iframe to a page on the app server. The page receives a bunch of tokens, one of which is the client, the context token that allows it to talk back to SharePoint. It can be inserted using CSUM, and this is the same way you would insert a regular web parts using CSUM in 2010. One of the things I didn't got to mention is you can inherit the site styles, even though it's an iframe and a page hosted in a different page. The code that gets added automatically with Visual Studio will make that iframe look and inherit the styles of your site. So if you have a theme site, the web part will look and follow the theme of that site. If you have information that the client web part cannot receive, but the parent page has, and you're building a custom app, not an app that you're going to sell in the marketplace, you can use post message. And I'm being very specific about this is not an app that you could sell in the marketplace, mainly because if you remember, the code that I added in the app installed had two web parts. One was the web part itself, and the other was the script web part that allows it to answer the post message question from it. So this is not a web part that any user could add. It's actually a web part that is built to one specific purpose. We didn't get to do deployment, but I do want to point something out about deployment, which is you've probably seen the when you deploy an app, you need two things. And when you're working with Access Client Services, you need an app ID and a client, and an app ID and an app secret. And those things are the things that the app will use to authenticate itself and convert that client, that context token into the access token. There's several ways of getting them. One of them is the app is to register yourself as a Microsoft Seller ID, and you can actually create those for like any tenant, and your app will be able to install in any tenant. But if you're only installing in one specific tenant, you actually don't need to do that. There's a page, and let me show it to you very quickly, on SharePoint, and it's documented in MSDN, which allows you to grab and create an app ID and an app secret for your app. And the reason why this is interesting is because if you're only deploying that app in that tenant, then you don't need to go and register as a Microsoft Seller ID for the store and all of that. You can just come to this page, get your client, your app ID, get your app secret for this specific tenant, and this will take care of registering that for you. And the place where you would go and put those in is when you go and publish your app from Visual Studio. You're going to come here and say publish. I'm going to create a new profile. And this is going to ask you for your app ID and your app secret, because those values will be stored in the app itself, both in the app and in the app package. And those are the key things that SharePoint will use when authenticating your app. All right, let me go back to these slides. The app server also needs to know this client ID and client secret. And deploying the app into the catalog is as simple as once you hit publish, Visual Studio will generate a .app package for you, which is basically a SIP package renamed. And that is the package that you need to go and deploy into SharePoint for it to be available to be installed in all your in all of the sites available in your tenant. There's a lot of things that I didn't cover, mainly because I wanted to be very specific and very scoped to two things that apply a lot when you think about content management, mainly because a lot of the content management scenarios have to do with custom logic, custom business logic that you want to trigger in different parts of SharePoint, which tie very well with remote event receivers, and also like different integration with external systems and displaying data, which ties very well with the client web parts. But there's a ton of new things that are very applicable as well. There's OData services, there's the possibility of using REST endpoints. There's a new client-side rendering model if you need to customize how forms look. There's the social feed that you've looked at. There's a season for that. You can actually go and create apps that go and post things to the feed, into the social feed on behalf of the user who performed the operation. There's workflow, and I didn't get to cover workflow because there is a lot of things to talk about workflow, but I do have good sessions to recommend you to go on and look at. There's new managed navigation, which is also available using the client-side object model, and there's the design manager where you can create like design packages, etc. All of that will be applicable in different parts of the app building model. So closing really fast because my timer is banging me. The app model, I think the app model opens a lot of opportunities, mainly because it enables you to do a lot of the things that you could only do using full trust solutions and being very tied into how SharePoint works and being very constrained every time we upgrade to like, oh, my stuff doesn't work anymore, or it's depending on this, this, and that. The app model creates a very nice model of separation where the contract between your app and SharePoint is very well defined in a way that both the app and SharePoint can move at different rhythms and different places without the risk of it breaking. And it allows you to customize SharePoint like very deeply. There's a lot of good things that you can do. Part of that is because the app model is both available on-prem and on the cloud, which means all of the things that we did today, you could do it on-prem. And it leverages a lot of the cross-platform standards. But one of the things that I really want you to take away from this talk is if you're thinking about building custom apps, you're not planning on building an app that you're going to sell like 2,000 people and you're going to put it in the marketplace, but you're actually planning about building a specific app for one specific customer that has one specific needs to put in the app catalog, there's a lot of opportunities for you to like push the barriers of the app model by doing things like the things that we did today of plugging into the host web and interacting with the elements that already exist in there, and maybe even interacting with some of the things that are not yet exposed in the app web, but there are exposed in the host web. And you can actually use those things to create solutions against the cloud or against on-prem. So I really think there's a great opportunity there to integrate very deeply into the host web when you think about corporate apps. Last thing, some of the talks that are of interest to you, if you're interested on some of the other things that are available on the cloud, like record some of the records management and doc ID and Sentoo, et cetera, there's a great talk on best practices for ECM. There's a very high level what's new with enterprise content management. There's a great talk that I actually recommend to you guys, and you probably don't have it on your schedule because it was labeled as IT Pro, which is a deep dive on integrating SharePoint metadata with other metadata stores. This is a talk given by another ECM dev, and they're actually going to go very deep into the client-side object model of taxonomy, and they're going to be using the taxonomy object. He's going to be using the taxonomy object model to interact with SharePoint from the client side. Really, really, really interesting stuff if you're working with taxonomy. If you're looking to work with apps, there's a bunch of talks in there. And if workflow is your thing, there's two great sessions by the team that built up the workflow infrastructure to go and look at. So that's it for today. Let's open it for